With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm John McKenzie, the Jack Harrison back post cross of the podcast, flying off the boot, curling and gently dropping onto my teammate's head. And I'm joined by the Patrick Bamford header of the podcast, Tom Woodhead, cushioned, bouncing but unnervingly goal-bound. And finally, the Luke Ayling pass after the run before of the podcast, almost so good, but in the end, almost so bad. It's Tom Alderson. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. If I'm the Luke Ayling pass after the run, does that make you the Melier who has to clean up my mess in the end after I go on a long rant and don't actually make a point in the end?
Something like that. We did warn you that you were going to be at the receiving end of one of these intros one day, so I thought better sooner than later.
I'm at the sub-in for Darren.
Yeah, exactly. Darren lives to fight another day, but unfortunately you have to take the flak. Tom Woodhead, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. It felt good to have, I think I was talking about this on the pod the other day, the first normal game out of the way that didn't have any extra meanings to it other than just being a Premier League game, really. So, yeah, it was nice.
Yeah, I've just realised that we've got two Toms on the podcast, so this is going to be a fun one for me as the host. But yeah, let's just jump straight into it. We've had hundreds and hundreds of questions today, so we're going to try and get through as many of the topics as possible, if not all the individual questions. But as I said on the Twitter account, we did appreciate all of the questions that were sent in. Let's begin with, as we always begin, with a little bit of a chat just about how it felt. Tom Woodhead, how did that feel?
It felt even. It felt like, I think it felt like the sort of game that we expected it to be, like quite tight and both teams having chances, but not too many of them. In general, it was nice to come out of it with a win because I think it was a fairly even game and it could have gone either way really. But it's always nice when we, I think if we get to a game like that at nil, if we get to half time in a game like that at 0-0, we nearly always play better in the second half. So I was pretty happy when we managed to, you know, get to that half time and I felt quite confident that Bielsa would shake things up a bit and improve us, and so it happened.
We had a question from Ezra Cohen, Tom Alderson, saying, "Were we a bit lucky today? How would you answer that?"
He's probably right. Like it depends which XG model you look at, but like some have us just ahead, some have Sheffield United just ahead. But they obviously had those two massive chances. I think it was Lundstrom, and I can't remember who the other one was, but it was from a corner. So whereas we didn't really make a massive chance, probably apart from the goal. So we probably were a bit lucky in the end, but we've had it over the last couple of seasons that we don't get those matches go our way usually. So it is quite nice to get one of these. We'll need them in the Premier League.
You make your own luck, Tom.
It's one of those ones, isn't it, where so much of it comes down to aesthetics, I always think, with Leeds. And you know, we did give up that chance, as you mentioned, the McGoldrick sort of flicked pass to Lundstrom, which was saved by Melier, which was definitely a big chance. I think it came up at about 0.47 in XG terms, which is pretty big. And then I think there was Jack Robinson, is that his name? Or Joe Robinson, I can never remember his name, but at the back post from a corner. We had the Stuart Dallas dribble of the goalkeeper, which he then weak-assed towards the goal and it didn't go in. So I think that was a fairly big chance as well. Again, probably not as big as a lot of people would have thought, but it was certainly a big chance. So it was bigger than 0.3, according to StatsBomb. But yeah, I think with the aesthetic side of things, I think sometimes when our man marking falls down and we're sort of reshuffling, everything looks a little bit hectic and we look quite open. And also, I would say, in terms of possession, we'll hold the ball for much of the game. And I felt in the second half, you're right, Tom, that we did look a lot more assured after the half time. But again, we didn't translate that into a lot of clear-cut chances. So it's one of those things where it's quite hard to really read the game, I think, because we looked in control pretty much from the half-time onwards, apart from those big chances where you sort of give away gilt-edge opportunities to the opposition. And if they put those in, then, you know, it would have been a different story completely. So it's... Yeah, I think there's certainly, I mean, it's a game of luck, isn't it? We talk about how football is stochastic and anything can happen. And yesterday, the things that could have happened went our way. And it's certainly nice to have that happening at this point in the season. Sheffield United will have hoped it went the other way, no doubt, because they've now had three losses on the bounce. And it's starting to look a long way up for them, given the run that they've got. But yeah, as you say, nice for us to come out of there with the win. We should talk about the structure. Tom Woodhead and I, before we came on, were having just a chat about what the structure looked like, and it was certainly a very interesting and unique structure, I thought, from Leeds, and something that I think is worth talking about in general in terms of some of the players I think who did quite well yesterday definitely benefited from the structure. And the question I would ask is, how often are we going to play a structure like this? How often are players going to benefit from that structure? So Richard Lang said, how did Leeds formation tactics wise adapt to Sheffield United setup? So who wants to jump in with an answer here? We'll go with you, Tom Alderson. What did you make of the setup yesterday?
I've got to be honest, I did struggle to follow how we were actually setting up, and it's only since looking back this morning that I've sort of managed to get my head around it, because like Dallas, he was all over the place in the first half, wasn't he? And then kind of went left in the second half. But what was it? I think it was Tom on the podcast earlier in the weeks. Like, we were building up a lot on the right and just leaving Jack Harrison to do his own thing on the left, which we've seen quite a lot before, haven't we?
Yeah, that was an interesting one. I think it was what I found really interesting is we're doing a lot of overloading on the left rather than the right. We usually overload on the right, and there was a few examples of us sort of tending that way. With respect to Stuart Dallas, and I think that's the sort of key question, like, where did Stuart Dallas play? And I also think, like, the best way of answering this is always to talk about roles rather than positions. So what was it that Bielsa had told Dallas to do yesterday? One of them was off the ball, was to mark John Lundstrom. And so in that respect, you know, we had Phillips and Dallas side by side, both sort of man marking the two central midfielders that Sheffield United had. But on the other hand, he was obviously expected to play as more of a sort of shuttling player, carrying the ball forward in attack, getting forward in attack, and sort of aiming for, I would say, the areas behind the two wing-backs that we had. So trying to get in and help out in the build-up with Costa and Harrison. And one of the things I noticed a lot, actually, was that Harrison and Dallas would swap positions quite a lot. So sometimes when Harrison dropped deep, to track the opposition wing back, you would see Stuart Dallas often filling in the space that he'd vacated as well. And there were some times when he ended up, especially in the second half after Oliver Norwood came on at around the 64th minute, I think, and Sander Berger, who had been playing in the central midfield position, then moved into one of the wider midfield positions. And so Dallas was then tasked with tracking him a little bit more, did a little bit more defending, and Berger was almost playing into that left-hand side channel. So I think we saw him popping up in a defensive situation on the left a lot more as well. But yeah, the role that he was given was, you know, do your defensive work, help out, and then sort of track, shuttle in between Phillips and Click and try and help up in the build-up play, particularly in wide areas. And I think it largely worked quite well. And that was something that you sort of picked up on, Tom Woodhead, as Tom Alderson has mentioned, the fact that we were quite happy to sort of leave big spaces on the left. For the most part, and just sort of cover them as and when was needed. And I think that's largely what happened. How did you feel about the structure?
Specifically about Dallas, who I think, as we've sort of alluded to, he really is the key piece of the puzzle here, isn't he? But I know on this podcast we've often been a little bit critical of Dallas's passing and some other elements of his game, but I think what he is, and certainly when Pablo Hernandez isn't playing, is he is probably one of our most dynamic players in that he's happy to drive forward, he's happy to try and make things happen. He's got that sort of special move of starting off a 1-2, hasn't he? If he could progress the ball all the way from our goal to their goal just in 1-2s, I get the impression that would be Dallas's sort of platonic ideal of what football should be. So, I think when he plays in this role, which, you know, we probably won't see it that often because it's very dependent on what the opposition are doing. But I think he does provide a real thrust to the team when we're looking perhaps a bit stagnant in possession. Players will be passing it from side to side a little bit. But Dallas, when he gets the ball, as I say, he'll pass it to someone and he'll be straight off on a forward run. So I think it does bring a real sort of a dynamism and, as I say, thrust to that, to the team in general, just having him playing that role.
I think the fact that he was marking John Lundstrom for the majority of the game actually gave him a large amount of freedom, really. Lundstrom isn't a player on the team who is again, as you've said, you've used the word dynamic, and I don't see Lundstrom as necessarily being the most dynamic of players. And so I think Dallas was given the sort of remit of making sure that he was kept quiet, and then when we were in possession of the ball, just sort of getting forward and helping out. And that's the sort of situation that Dallas really benefits from. And I also think that, you know, when he did move out to the left, because he wasn't there for most of the game in a lot of respects, there was just a little bit more space for him to just get his foot on the ball and pass it around. He was much better in the build-up. His passing was pretty excellent. He didn't lose the ball much at all. And I guess it does raise questions for me anyway in the long term, is like, where does Dallas fit into this team? Which I think is a very harsh question to ask off the back of his performance yesterday. But the way that I look at it is that he was filling a role there that needed filling, and normally is seen as a left back. And what we've seen this season in the Premier League, and I know it's a small sample size, but he's certainly fulfilled that midfield role when he's needed in that game. But in the left back position, we've raised questions about his ability to do the build up that is necessary. And so I guess my question is, you know, when if we do bring in someone else who is going to be able to play as a more of a shuttling eight, where does Dallas fit in the system? And I guess the attendant question there is, do we think that Dallas looked good mainly because of the system yesterday? And if so, where do we go from there, Tom Alderson?
I do like him in this system in one of the wing-back positions. So if it depends if you're going to keep Ayling as like the right-sided centre-back in the free, because you could get Dallas over there or keep him at left wing-back. I think I've said previously, I don't like him at left back. I don't think he's good enough. So if we were playing 4-1-4-1 as normal, I'd probably say it's right back or nothing really, which is a shame because he does such a good job.
Yeah, I think we could talk about Dallas all day long, so we should move on. Let's move on to talk a little bit about the match flow. We had a question from Simon who said, do you think we won that match through fitness? We seem to get stronger through the second half. Tom Woodhead, what would you answer to that?
I think it definitely was a contributory factor. We probably did look a little bit fitter than them towards the end. Not hugely so, but possibly enough to help create those spaces that led to the goal. But obviously there's a lot more going on, but I thought our fitness is always going to be a major part in any game, I think, because even with the really top teams, I think, you know, we'll be in the highest strata of fitness in this league, no problem. And so it's always going to be a factor in almost any game we play, I think.
I would say that I did feel as though Sheffield United with that substitution in the 74th minute to move Sander Berger out wide and bring Ollie Norwood in, that was them going for it a little bit more. I think their general match plan was to sort of absorb pressure in the first half and then come out and be a little bit more adventurous after the 60th minute, like I've said. And I think that probably comes down to it a certain extent as well. We just were given more space in their half in the second half as well.
I was quite surprised to see Norwood not playing, really, because as far as I could tell from the bits I've watched of them over the past season or two, he's always been one of their key players. So it seems, but I mean, I know he's not played the other matches this season either, has he? But it seems odd to me when he always seemed to be the player that made them tick.
For me, like, Sander Berge is probably their best player, and I think Sander Berge's best position is probably that sixth position. But the problem with Sheffield United is that I don't think they have quite as much going forward as they maybe want to, and so they felt the need to move Berger into that wider position because he's a little bit, again to use your word, a little bit more dynamic. He's going to get on the ball, he's very press resistant, he's going to just shuttle the ball into more dangerous areas, and I think he largely did that once he was shifted position. So I think that Ollie Norwood's obviously a great player as well, so they sort of felt, well, let's move Berger into a more dangerous position and we can rely on Norwood to do the job that he was doing. I would say that, you know, Matthias Klick, I thought, was kept pretty quiet in the first 60 minutes when he was largely marking Sander Berger. And for me, you know, that it was only once that move was made that Klick actually started looking a little bit more dangerous. He got a lot more license to move around when Norwood was his player who was marking him, really, than Berger. So I think that all sort of works out. We should talk about Roberts because we had loads of questions about Roberts. Yeah, so Arnie asked, Roberts, ? Very poor from me. The game passes him by at 10. What does he need to do to get involved more? Mickey P. Kerr said, I think the Roberts 10 experiment looks dead in the water. Where do you think we need to strengthen if we have two more in? There was loads of other questions about Roberts. All of the opinion of, that he is not working in any situation. And I think the real damning thing for me for Roberts yesterday was that he was basically playing as a second striker, and we've always said his strongest position is striker, and there's a certain sense in which it's hard to defend him even when he's put in a sort of situation perhaps where you might expect him to thrive in. He doesn't do too well. Now, with the caveat here, I think that the structure in the game was quite unique again, and you know, Roberts was having to do a lot of pressing work on centre backs and etc. But he didn't really get into the game as creatively as Rodrigo did when he jumped in as well. So, Tom Alderson, what's your take on Roberts? Is the experiment failed, as Mickey Kerr puts it, or is it simply again a quick question of, you know, is this system really the best for him?
I agree with Mickey that I don't think Roberts at 10 is his best position, because like he doesn't provide like what Pablo or maybe Rodrigo to an extent haven't seen enough of him yet. He's just not progressive. He doesn't create chances. And even playing there, he didn't really act as a second striker. Did he have a shot yesterday? I didn't have a chance to look at the stats. But that's kind of what you'd hope for. You'd get from him being in that position. And he just didn't bring that. And I felt when Rodrigo came on, we had just had so much more control. Rodrigo seemed to just connect the play together a lot more. Whereas with Roberts, he just feel like he just gets the ball and he'll just pass it almost like just to the side. I just don't think he adds anything to the team in that position.
If I can stand up for Roberts a little bit, it's definitely true that it's not his best position. I think he tries a bit too hard sometimes to do something special. Like, he'll try flicks and things when they're not really needed, because I think he's trying to show what he can do, but it doesn't come off a lot of the time. And what I think he is useful as is he knows where to stand in the right place, which sounds like a stupid thing, but I think that's why Bielsa is happy to play him for 45 minutes, because he knows that his off-the-ball work is mostly what Bielsa wants. He's running into the right spaces, he's marking the right people, and it's more when he gets the ball that I think the problems start to appear. You're definitely right that playing essentially as a second striker yesterday, it was his chance to show what he can do, and as I said, I think he was trying a bit hard to show what he could do at times, and it just needs to calm down a little bit, I think. And it must be hard when you get injured so often, and usually he gets injured just when he's looking like, oh, maybe this player actually can contribute like quite a decent amount to this team. So I feel sorry for him, because he's now behind two players as a striker probably, and you know, we're assuming that we're going to sign another central midfielder, so he's way down the pecking order there. But he's clearly got talent, and it's I don't see him leaving the club. So In this transfer window. So it must be quite a difficult position for him to be in. But I think it does say something that Bielsa is, as I said, willing to play him there for 45 minutes at all. Because if he wasn't doing the right things off the ball, he would not be there.
Yeah, no, I do agree with that. And I think, again, one of my bugbears at the moment is the fact that we always talk about like tens and eights. And I don't think Bielsa really cares about that stuff that much. I think we know what the system is. We know that he's going to have two central midfielders. And we know that those midfielders are going to do what they need to do in that position to suit their best skill set. So for me, you know, if we'd have played that, set up yesterday and we'd have had, I don't know, Adam Forshaw available, I'm not entirely sure that the system would have looked quite the same as it did. And I guess with that in mind, a lot of the criticism that then comes of Roberts comes from the fact that people expect him to be a 10, or they expect him to be creative in that sort of situation. And I'm not always convinced that's necessarily what Bielsa wants. And also, yeah, to back up what you're saying, Tom Woodhead, is that I think Robert's game yesterday was all about off the ball movement. It was all about how do we deal with the fact that when Sheffield United have the ball in their possession, they've got three centre backs and we've got one striker. And the solution to that was to push up Roberts onto one outside centre back, Bamford to push up on the other, and then we had Click sitting on Sander Berger. But then shuttling between Ampadu and Berger and trying to close the passing lane down. So to a certain extent, you know, how can someone like Tyler Roberts be expected to be the sort of creative linchpin that people expect of him as a 10 when a lot of the time he's sort of having to think all the time, how am I positionally with respect to where the back three are? It's not quite so simple as just being like, you're a 10. Because for me, like a 10 is a sort of creative, free spirit player who is given license to do what they want. So it's certainly a tricky situation for him to deal
with.
Yeah,
and I think in theory, a player like Tyler Roberts playing in that kind of position in our system, if the things that he want that he tries actually come off, it could be quite devastating. But you're talking kind of like Lionel Messi or Mbappe sort of levels of stuff, you know, dribbling through two or three players and then that, you know, if some of those dribbles that he attempts quite often like actually came off, they would look great, but they just don't. He's just not quite good enough for it, I don't think, at the moment.
With that said, you know, when he plays as a lone striker, I mean, he did it the second half of the Fulham game for a long stretch. He looks fine.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the difficulty with him, is that how do you get him into the team when, you know, the position, same with Rodrigo, right? When the strongest position they're probably going to play in is already been taken up by Bamford. But
I think what he really needs is a year without being injured, no matter how much he plays. You know, even if he's only playing here and there, I think it would do him the world of good to have a year where he doesn't have a serious injury and he just stays fit.
Yeah. We did have a few questions about Rodrigo, because obviously the half-time Rodrigo comes on and replaces Roberts, as we expected him to do. And I think people largely thought that Rodrigo had a good game. Again, with the caveat that, you know, Rodrigo tried a lot, and it's very easy to sort of focus on players who are obviously trying to do things as having a good work rate or whatever. A couple of questions. Rashad says, Rodrigo influenced the game with clever ball playing skill, but his link up with Bamford isn't quite there yet. Trying to do the same things. Is this a potential long-term partnership or not? Matt Duncan said, Rodrigo looking stronger in build-up rather than an out-and-out nine. If we were to sign Rodrigo de Paul, could we start Rodrigo de Paul, Rodrigo and Bamford? Tom Alderson, let's go to you. How did you feel that Rodrigo was when he came on yesterday?
I thought he did really well. The best example of it is obviously for the goal where he demanded the ball, which you always like to see, and then obviously the pass out to Harrison, which was for the cross. But I just thought with him on the field, he just sort of like connected the midfield and attack, which I don't think we had in the first half. And he was quite happy to take it under pressure, which put like Roberts, and I don't want to go back to Roberts, but like he wasn't as happy to do that. I just think we just looked more sort of dominant and controlling with him on the field, and I thought he did really well.
again, I would probably add the caveat that, you know, what we know about Rodrigo is that he's played with in a two-striker system for most of his career, and certainly the best times in his career have been in a two-striker system. And I think yesterday, probably the issue came from trying to play Roberts in a two-striker system, who's not used to playing in a two-striker system, so that when Rodrigo came on, we saw the best of Rodrigo and probably the worst of Roberts. And again, this is why I always want to come back to this question that, you know, we're going to go on to talk about Robin Koch as well, but these three players are the players I think a lot of the fans were raving about yesterday: Stuart Dallas, Rodrigo, and Robin Koch. And I think that the reason why those three players had good games is because that system suits them. And so the question is, when we move back into our normal system, who are we going to play that system against? We may play against someone like Wolves, because Wolves play a 3-4-3. We'll probably play against Brighton as well, because they play a back three as well. But beyond that, I think most teams will be playing different systems, and we won't be seeing that sort of approach. So I guess my sort of question is, how, to what extent do you agree with that? Because I don't think it's necessarily given that I'm right there. It could well be the case that, you know, we've just seen good performances from players who are going to play well for the rest of the season. But Tom Woodhead, how do you feel about the fact that, you know, this system is very specialised? We've barely seen it at all. I would characterise it as a 3-5-2, basically. We match them for a 3-5-2 largely, and we're not going to see that happen very much. So what's your thinking on the way that the system enhanced certain players and not others?
Certainly, I think in the case of Rodrigo, it could only help that he's playing in a two-striker system. And Koch as well, I guess, probably benefits from not being surrounded by players when he's got the ball at the back and being in the middle of that back three. I can see that you know, he plays better when he has a bit of time to look up and pick a pass. Could we fit all these different players into the system? It looks like Rodrigo De Paul probably isn't happening, but we are looking to sign a midfielder of that ilk or someone. Mm-hmm. I almost think Bielsa finds ways to put the players that are playing well in the team, I think. Mm. He'll find solutions to problems. He spends his entire life finding solutions to those kind of problems. So it might be something we've not thought of, but I think he would find a way to have the players who are playing well in the team. Like, you know, he won't want to drop Bamford at the moment, will he? And if Rodrigo plays well, he'll want to keep him in the team as well. So I think he'll find a way to do it, whether that even involves Rodrigo possibly moving out wide or something like that. So it's not something that I worry about as such, because I think having a stronger squad with more depth can only be a good thing, really, at this point.
The name which seems to be doing the rounds at the moment is Mikael Cuisance from Bayern, young French player. Say we bought him and we were playing him yesterday, where would he have fit into the team, Tom Alderson?
I don't want to, his Click's position is probably, I haven't seen enough of him to say, but he would probably be replacing Click, but then that's unlikely to happen.
Why couldn't he play the role Dallas was playing? I mean, he's left-footed, right? So, and Dallas was mostly in midfield anyway.
I'm not sure, to be honest. I don't know how good he is defensively, if he could play that position that Dallas played. I suppose Dallas was basically playing alongside Phillips in the first half, wasn't he? I can't see why not.
Yeah, I think that he would fitted fine into the Dallas position. I guess that's kind of why I'm asking this question, because to me it sort of feels like at the moment a lot of the situations we find ourselves in are, oh, we've got this selection headache, what are we going to do? Who are we going to fill there? And we're like, oh, once again, Bielsa's come through and solved this problem that we didn't think was possible. But, you know, bringing someone in like Cuisance, I think, just sort of takes that away. And suddenly you're in this sort of situation where you're like, oh, we've got a genuinely elite midfielder here. I'm interested in the impact that's going to have on the squad in general, because it feels like this is a problem we had all last season, right? Once Forshaw got injured, we're in this sort of scenario where we were like, well, I guess that's Dallas in midfield again. And I guess we're going to be in a position where that isn't necessarily going to be an issue anymore.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment.
Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Anyway, let's move on to talk about the defensive side of things a little bit more, because we've already mentioned Robin Koch. Dan Holdsworth said, lots of love for Koch on the timeline. I thought he did well, particularly late on with Sharp. Be interested to hear your take on his game. And Jamie Smith says, other than the two penalties, was there any massive difference between Koch's performance today and his first two? He looked solid so far to me, just unlucky with the decisions. Tom Woodhead, we'll go with you.
I just think he looks a bit more confident in everything he does, a little bit more sure of what he should be doing and when. I thought he tracked their players really well yesterday. There was one occasion, I can't remember which player it was, who got a little bit away from him, but he managed to recover and tracked him basically all the way across our penalty box. I thought he was solid, and his passing was good. As I said, I think playing in the middle of a back three is good for him with his passing, because I don't think he's not necessarily the best at quick, sharp interplay at the back like some of our players are good at. Like Ayling's quite good at that, like little quick, sharp passes and then running, whereas I think Koch's better when he has a second to look up and consider the pass. So yeah, I thought he played well.
Tom Alderson, how did you feel about Koch in the last three games compared to the last game in isolation?
You could see him just getting more used to the system as he's played game by game, and just seems more confident with the man marking and like when to engage. I don't think he did particularly well in the first game, but no one's going to do that well at Anfield, are they? It's just nice to see him sort of becoming more confident with the system, and also having someone that's good in the air, because apart from Cooper, like that was probably the only thing you could hold against White, and I think that definitely showed up yesterday.
Interesting that Dan mentions it here, actually, that he did well, particularly late on with Sharp, and I felt as though once Sharp came on, he was playing off the last man a little bit more, and I think it was easier for Koch to get his head around that. I think with David McGoldrick, and a much maligned player in my opinion, and I'm going to touch on him actually in the video analysis, because he's such an interesting player from a Leeds man marking perspective, because he's just so fluid and dynamic, moves all over the place, and so causes a huge problem for Leeds' back line. Do you follow him deep into his own half and risk, you know, being open at the back? Once Billy Sharp came on, he was much more sort of a standard striker, and much easier for him to just sort of get eased onto by Koch. So Koch was just sort of getting touch tight and then sort of putting a leg in or nodding the ball away from him when it came into him, and I think that made a big difference as well. And I guess we should talk about Melier as well, because Melier had a fantastic game. Now, we did have comments on the Twitter feed saying what a shame it was that Darren wasn't here to sing the praises of Melier after that game. And so, at great expense to ourselves, I actually have got a surprise for you, in that Darren is now has sent me in a clip to sing the praises of Melier. So this is what Darren had to say.
He's accepting an Oscar from a film set somewhere in the Bahamas.
Exactly. So here is, without further ado, is Darren Driver.
Hey up, everyone. I couldn't be on the podcast this week because I'm going to London with my wife to look at some art. So someone will have had to take the hit in the introduction for me, so cheers whichever one of you did that. I couldn't let Melier's performance yesterday pass without my comment, especially after John saying on Twitter that I'd be insufferable on the podcast this week, when he knew full well that I wouldn't be able to make it. So instead, in a pretty insufferable move, I thought I'd send this through to celebrate the granite wrists, the hands like shovels, the solidity, the reflexes, but most of all, the totally unflappable nature of our young French number one. That was a really, really, really classy performance, especially after he made a mistake last week, which led to the Mitrovic goal. That save, man. That save. You won't see a better save than that all season, honestly. Just incredible. I also wanted to just quickly give a shout out for Dallas, who I criticised heavily last week, but who was brilliant yesterday, as was Cooper, and Bamford, and Cock, and Ayling, and Rodrigo, and Click, and Harrison. Anyway, have a good pod, lads, and I'll catch you next week when I've had my fill of culture and I just want to talk about football again. Cheers, lads. Bye.
So, guys, let's talk a little bit about Melier. Obviously, he had that world-class save, but we've already mentioned from John Lundstrom. How did we feel about him in general? We had a question from Kevin Forsyth-Bates, who said, do we actually have the biggest goalkeeper talent in the world? I don't know if I'd go that far, but we've certainly got a talent on our hands. Tom Woodhead, sing the praises of Ilan Melier.
Yeah, he was superb, wasn't he? The first... brilliant save that he made when Lundstrom was in a almost one-on-one situation. That was one where I almost had my head hung already because I thought this is definitely going in. It was one of those where you just resigned to it. And when he made that, like, honestly, I can't think in the last 10 or 15 years, honestly, of a better save from a Leeds keeper than that. And I know that sounds hyperbolic, but there might be one, but I can't think of one. And I also thought in general, it was Melier's best game for Leeds that I've seen. Possibly Arsenal was very good, but there was no pressure on that game. He conceded a goal in that game as well. So, yeah, I thought his distribution was superb yesterday as well. He seems to have this knack where he knows just how long to wait before passing it, which, you know, can be a bit terrifying at times. But it was and his decision making of when to come out and sweep up loose balls and things seems to be getting better and better. He looks like, yeah, we do possibly have a real talent on our hands. And to look at it in very awful, cynical terms, this looks like possibly someone we've paid £5 million for who could potentially be worth £30, £40 million very soon.
Yeah, I'm just looking through his stats now in terms of distribution. He attempted 41 passes and completed 38. So there's three misplaced passes, and all of those three misplaced passes were long passes. So just remarkable distribution. And actually, one of the things I've noticed in looking at some of the underlying numbers and stats is that we use our goalkeeper in the build-up play a lot more now. I don't know whether or not that's because we're under a lot more pressure from opposition presses, but we weren't using our goalkeeper that much in the build-up phases last season, and this season we're using them a lot more. And so under pressure, he's just absolutely fantastic distributionally. And I made comments last week just saying, oh, both of the chances that we were a little bit iffy about that he gave to Fulham last week looked like he just wasn't getting down quick enough. There was the penalty to Mitrovic and the Bobby Reid shot, and he just got down fantastically against John Lundstrom. So that allayed a lot of my fears as well. So I think if we see Melier carrying on like this, there won't be any worries about having him in goal going forward. In an attacking sense, actually, there wasn't that much in the way of questions. There weren't that many comments made about anyone, really, apart from Jan Poveda. So Miss G LUFC said, can we talk about anything on Poveda, please? Seemed to have a lot of fizz and ability, but it was apparent just how many touches he wanted to take before making a decision. It reminded me of early Harrison. Tom Alderson, what did you make of Jan Poveda yesterday?
I completely agree that he looked like he was struggling with the... because he's played more under 23 games. It looked like he was struggling with the gap between under 23s and senior football. They just expected to have more time, and he never really looked like doing anything when he had the ball. And I think there was a question earlier about where do we need to recruit if someone came in. I still think we're a winger short, because it would have been nice to have someone like a Ryan Kent or just someone that could come on that you think can do something in that position, because Costa and Harrison have been playing well, but we don't really have options out wide.
I think Tom's been a little bit harsh. I thought he did actually look quite dangerous. What annoyed me was his refusal to pass. There was one time when he made a really good run and then had a shot, and that really annoyed me. It felt again a little bit like Roberts, that he was trying a bit too hard to make something special happen rather than just playing his part in the move. I think he looks like a real talent, and what we need to find out is whether he's going to be able to cope with the physicality or not, because I think the technical ability is there, and I think if he calms down a bit, the football brain seems to be there as well. So I agree it'd be nice to bring in a winger, but equally I like the idea of Poveda getting some game time. And Bielsa doesn't really think this way, but I half wondered if he brought him on because he's going to be playing against Man City next week, because obviously Jack Harrison can't play next week. So it'd be interesting to see if he starts that game or if he goes for Alioski. I know this isn't the preview pod, but...
I think I sort of sit in between those two positions. I think Poveda looks exciting. He does look like early Harrison. He does want to sort of drive at players. I think he's probably better decision making wise than Harrison. If that's not sacrilege, but at this point anyway, in their careers, and would like to see that decision making improving. But you know, a lot of the time these players are brought in because they are young enough to not do the decision-making thing. They just sort of do a lot of things on instinct. And I think at this point, you know, when you're that quick and that young and you're that good on the ball, you can get away with a lot of that. I feel like anecdotally in my own fairly pathetic amateur career, I was much more instinctive and instinctual as a young player. And then as I got older and players got quicker than me, I then had to learn how to sort of think my way around a little bit more. And I think the same is probably true of him. One criticism I would have of Poveda is that he's too left-footed at the moment, in terms of, you can see, I felt like Ender Stevens got the measure of him quite quickly when he realised he's always going to try and get onto his left foot. And you want to have your wingers be able to go both ways, just because it puts a little bit of uncertainty in the minds of the players that you're up against.
I think out of all the players that we have that, you know, we try and move around and put in weird positions, Poveda is the one that I wouldn't mind seeing in that sort of attacking central midfield position, just to see what it looks like, because I don't know. I think more so than Roberts, he's got the sort of football brain to cope with it. But again, maybe possibly not physical enough at the moment.
Right, let's move on to... I was trying to do positives and negatives at the end. The positives that I have was for Stuart Dallas, and I feel like we've already talked about Stuart Dallas a lot. So I'll leave that there, other than to say we thought that Dallas was brilliant, and it was great having him in that position, able to play that position. And Darren Fletcher yesterday on Match of the Day rightly giving him praise for his performance yesterday. In terms of the negatives, again, don't like to focus on the negatives, but there are a few questions that were raised. First one from James Murray Wood. How do you see Llorente fitting into this team? The square ball, I believe, we're considering ailing to be more at risk when we move to a back three, given how assured Koch is starting to look. After Saturday, will Bielsa be flexible in his requirements for three centre-backs against two centre-forwards? Who wants to jump in and answer this one? Tom Alderson?
They're probably right that ailing would be the one that would drop out if we went to a back three, but I don't think it'd be him out of the team. I think he'd probably move over to right wing-back. So that would be probably either Costa or, well, one of Costa or Dallas, you think, would drop out for Llorente. Because Llorente, would he play in the middle? Or would you think that position probably belongs to Koch now?
I think he would probably play on the outside right, just from what I've seen of him at Sociedad last season. He did play on the outside of right of a back three, but... I don't know. I mean, my question would be, wouldn't you just stick with Ailing in the back?
Yeah,
I
absolutely would. I'm the biggest fan of Ailing on the right of a back three going. I think it perfectly suits his skill set. The only reason that it looks a bit shaky sometimes is that he's getting up the pitch, and that's inherent to what he's doing. So I love him in a back three, and I wouldn't... from the bits I've seen of Llorente, he seems to be more of a classical centre-back in that he won't make those forward runs, which might be useful in certain situations, but I think in general with our build-up play and the way that we like to attack, having Ailing almost be able to be this faux full-back slash wing-back slash central defender, it adds an element to our game that certainly, now that we don't have Ben White, I'd be loath to lose.
No, I totally agree with that, and I mean, we played Sheffield United yesterday, and they are the paramount case of playing this sort of overlapping fullback centre backs, and that's basically the way that Ailing was playing yesterday. And you can just drop Calvin Phillips back in and cover if you need to, but it's just nice having the option of a mobile centre back who you can get forward and help in an attacking sense, right? Whereas if we went with Cooper, Koch and Llorente, those back three, that back three is just staying as a back three. You're not getting any sort of dynamism from them whatsoever. So for me, I would happily stick Ailinger as a right centre back, and then the question is, how do you fit things around? So to be honest, I think that Llorente is just going to be used as centre back cover. He will get games because Cooper isn't going to make it through the season without injury. He's already had one injury this season. I suppose it's going to be a question of Koch and Llorente sort of competing against each other in training, so that should the knees arise, that they'll both be ready to play. And I don't necessarily see a problem with that, to be honest. I think I'm happy with the way that the back line is at the moment. Right. We had a question from Sydney Rough Diamond, who says, should Harrison look to get an early ball in more often? Can't help feeling we would benefit with runners into the box we have. Or is it a Bielsa ploy to have him delay so he can get into the right shape to restrict potential counters? Tom Woodhead.
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because sometimes I think Harrison does have games where he gets the ball in like quickly most times, and then we're just moaning about his crossing. So that was obviously a beautiful cross for Bamford's head, possibly after the one for Roof in the Derby first leg of the playoff semi, the best cross I can remember Harrison producing for Leeds. I think we all know that Harrison sometimes dithers on the ball a bit too much and isn't decisive enough in his decision making. I think the balance on the whole is probably about right. It's just that sometimes the decision is wrong one way or the other, if that makes sense. Like his mixture between quick delivery and keeping the ball or waiting, as it's about right, but sometimes he does it wrong in both camps, if that makes sense.
In answering the question, why do we not go more direct more often? I do think it is because it's a Bielsa ploy to have him delay, but I don't think it's to do with restricting potential counters. I think it's more to do with attack. It's about giving players a chance to hit the channels that he wants players to hit. And I think that the goal yesterday is a good example of that, because you see the ball goes over Rodrigo's head and finds Bamford. They're in different channels, and you just give that extra cover so that if the cross is slightly short for Bamford, then Rodrigo puts it in. There'll be someone at the back post, and largely speaking, against a back four, you'll have five channels to attack, and against a back three, you'll have four. And so I think a lot of it is to do with, particularly last season, was to do with this sort of positional play where you make sure that you're finding spaces between back lines and really attacking them. And I think if you were to play the ball in too early, a lot of the time you're just making it much harder for yourself to create good chances. So I suspect that's where that comes from. We did have a question from Joshua Annis Brown saying, we really solid enough at left back. I know Dallas didn't really play there, but chances came from that area. It's a concern for me. Well, we've talked about this a little bit in the podcast so far, but yeah, how much of a concern is the left back area, Tom Alderson? How much do you think that we need to bring in a left back in the remainder of the window?
I do think we could do with a proper left back, or a fit Barry Douglas if one of those exists, but it's probably as rare as a fit Adam Forshaw. I think, Dallas, I just mentioned previously, I don't think he's good enough as a pure defensive fullback, but in terms of like the system we played yesterday, and as a wing back, I do like him there, and I'd be quite happy for him to stay there.
I can certainly see that it would be good for us to sign a left back. What I think, on balance, I'd rather buy a midfielder and a winger than a midfielder and a left back, even though buying a left back potentially upgrades the team more. I just think if you want to get a really good left back who's going to be a definite first choice, you need to be spending like 20 million or something. And I don't know, I feel like I'd rather have an extra option on the wing than do that, because I think we could get a winger for, you know, more like 10, 15 million. But then again, this is getting into talking about finances. And I always think when football fans talk about finances, 90% of it's bullshit, because you don't actually know the ins and outs of most of this stuff most of the time. So maybe I should just shut up.
Well, there you have it. Looking forwards, obviously we've got Manchester City next week. We will be doing our regular preview podcast on Wednesday. Other than that, the under-23s have finished playing. I think they were winning quite comfortably. I know that Sam Greenwood got a hat-trick. They were finishing while we started recording this podcast, so I'm not entirely sure of the final score. So there's nothing else really going on in the world of Leeds United after today's game, and then the game on Saturday. We'll be back, as I said, on Wednesday. If you can't wait until then, we do have plenty of bonus material available on Patreon. Patreon is a subscribing system which allows you to get hold of bonus content that we don't put out for free. I'm putting out a video analysis later today, just looking back over the game yesterday, some of the tactical realities there, and also some of the individual performances to have a look at too. We also have podcasts on there and written stuff as well. So if that sounds interesting to you, head over to www.patreon.com/allstatsaren'twe. Three people who have done that are Ben Carpenter, Joseph Ritchie, and Simon Harris. So thank you guys for getting involved. All that remains for me to do, though, is to say thank you to Tom Woodhead.
Thank you.
And thank you to Tom Alderson.
Cheers.
And we'll be back on Wednesday.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.